Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. Do you love dogs? Are you in a quandary about why your dog is doing the things he's doing? Did you have a full head of hair when you first brought your dog home, and now you have precious few worrying about your dog's destructive behavior? Has your dog absconded with your favorite pair of socks or that special bra you wanted to wear today? Or did he hide your TV remote this weekend right before you wanted to watch the big game? Oh, my goodness. Well, today's your lucky day. You've tuned in to the best radio talk show that discusses every subject under the sun about our favorite companion pet, the dog. Don't worry if you realize you've missed all of our shows up to now. All you have to do is go to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, click on the page marked Rini's Radio Show. You'll see a huge list of podcast links from all the shows we've done this year. Scroll down the entire page to see which subjects are most interesting to you. Click on those links and listen to them. They're all about 30 minutes long. As a professional dog trainer, I'm always meeting people who are very upset with their dog because the dog might be showing aggression. Some puppies come into the home and within a day or so get seriously sick with major health problems that cost the family thousands of dollars. Buying a puppy or rescuing a dog is often an impulsive decision. People fail to research the dog's breed, but they also fail to look specifically for a quality breeder to find the puppy of their dreams. My guest today is Susan Belanda. Sue is a regular visitor to the Doghouse. She's been training dogs since 1961. She's been a wonderful mentor to me over the last several years, and I can't think of anyone I'd rather have talk to us today about how to choose a quality breeder for your next puppy. But first, let me tell you what services I offer right here in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Sue. You're in the doghouse again, girl.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you.
The only doghouse I enjoy being in.
Sue, there's so much bad breeding going on these days, and it's really upsetting for me to meet so many people who are disappointed with the dogs that they've chosen. Are good breeders concerned about the genetics of the breeding pair, like with their health, behavior, and the longevity of the breeding line?
Absolutely. A good breeder, when people think, first of all, the big myth people have is that, oh, I don't want a show dog, so I don't want to go to a breeder because I really don't want a show dog. And the show dog is the last thing that you need to go to a breeder for. Mm. The main reason you go to a good breeder is because they put the time, the effort, and the expense into genetically testing their dogs before they breed them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't own the bitch or the sire, then they will require that testing be done before they would breed their dog to either a male or a female.
So that would be a good question for people to ask a breeder, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. What genetic testing have you done to ensure that there's a less likely, now you can't guarantee with genetics, but that there's less of a chance that this dog is going to have a congenital defect,
okay,
such as in Dobermans or Rottweilers or von Willebrand's disease is an example.
Okay.
Or German Shepherds would be hip dysplasia. Mm-hmm. You know, these are just the common things most people know about.
Right.
And a good breeder is going to have their dogs x-rayed and registered with the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals, which is the OFA, and have the hips rated before they breed those dogs to produce puppies. And if you have generation after generation of OFA clear parents, then you're less likely to have hip dysplasia show up in a puppy.
I see.
So that's what a good breeder does. It's not about showing the dogs. It's about producing the most physically and mentally sound dogs that you can do.
That's interesting. What about checking on the longevity of the parents and the grandparents? Isn't that a key factor you want to find out, too?
Well, most breeds have an expected life expectancy. So, for example, you would know that a small dog like a Jack Russell Terrier or a Toy Fox Terrier is going to live a lot longer than a Great Dane.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And certain larger breeds, you're lucky if they live to be 10
right.
or 12. And some of the littler breeds, I've heard of some dogs living to be 20.
Wow.
18 or 20. Now, you know, that's not to say their quality of life is that good, but they can live that long.
Mm-hmm. But if you're getting a Great Dane or you're getting one of the larger breed dogs that don't normally live past 10 or 11, you want to make sure that the breeding pair and the grandparents at least live to be close to that age, right?
Oh, yes. You want to make sure they live to the life expectancy for that breed.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. And what about the behavior? How can a person who's looking for a puppy who really isn't all that skilled, knowing about what questions to ask, and they're listening to this program, how can they check on the behavior of the breeding pair and maybe the grandparents? How can they be relatively confident that their puppy will be well-behaved?
Well,
in
that's,
a genetic
that's
factor.
A twofold thing. First of all, there are organizations like the American Temperament Test Society that test dogs for temperament.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their whole thing. And there are puppy aptitude tests, and there are, you know, those are not that reliable because it's not an exact science.
Right.
And when you're testing another species, especially for mental qualities, I mean, we can't even test ourselves accurately.
That's true.
You know, you have to really, you know, realize that you're trying to test another species that has a whole different perspective on life. But you can make a good guess, educated guess about it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that a person should have researched their breeder well enough to know that breeder is going to help them select the right puppy for them.
Okay.
And if the breeder says you really shouldn't take this puppy, don't.
Good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I have had clients come to me with dogs they should never have gotten, and they'll tell me, well, the breeder told me this isn't a good choice for me, but I insisted on having that dog anyway, and then they wind up coming to me years later because they have problems with that animal.
Sure.
And that's true especially for breeds that tend to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs that are bred for guard work or police work or lines that are Schutzhund bred, or these people breed these dogs to be what we call hard because they have to be to do what the work they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a pet, you want to get a pet out of those lines, you have to be very, very careful. And I don't usually recommend people go for a pet from those lines.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, you know, it's a sliding scale. I mean, you can get within one breed, you can get, let's just pick on labs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can get a lab that's very laid back, and the typical type of lab people think of when they think of Labradors. But I can tell you that when the Labrador retrievers changed and they went from the English to the American lab, for 3 years in a row, labs were my number one biting breed of dog.
I can believe that because I meet a lot of American labs that are just way, way, way too overly aroused every single day, 24/7.
That's right. So you have to, even within a breed like a Labrador retriever, you have to know what the breeder's breeding for, which type it is, and then you have to look, ideally look at both parents, at least the mother,
mm-hmm.
and then the thing that I recommend, I actually have a whole little brochure I've made for people to use to help do this process.
Really?
And then what you have to do is ask the breeder for the names of people who have bought puppies from that breeding before, even a half a repeat breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And call the people up and say, what is it like living with your dog?
What about a breeder that has, let's say, testimonials on their website? Can those people be, when they're researching the breeder, can we trust a website testimonial section?
Oh, yes, you can, because unless they're absolutely a lie, then they're true. But the thing about testimonials on a website, a breeder's not going to put the negative ones up there.
That's correct.
And the thing is that certain lines of dogs can have idiosyncrasies, and breeders do not breed for or against those. For example, if you call up the people from the last litter, and there's 10 puppies in the litter, and 5 of those people say, this is a wonderful dog, and I only have one complaint, the dog loves to eat paper. Well, then you know that if there's 5 puppies in the litter that are not raised by the same people and they all like to eat paper, then that's an idiosyncrasy that could bind.
Yeah.
And it's not something a breeder is even going to really think about, because genetics is so complex, it's hard to produce what you want as it is without getting into these little idiosyncrasies.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes those idiosyncrasies can be barking. And if you're in a situation where you can't have a dog that likes to bark a lot, then you want to avoid a breeding where people say, oh, my dog's wonderful, but he just seems to bark more than I think he should, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
These are idiosyncrasies that can be, the tendency can be inherited. And we have the same thing in people. How many times have you heard families talk about, oh, cousin so-and-so is just like great uncle whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people pass idiosyncrasies within families, too.
Right.
So it's not uncommon for it to happen in dogs.
Right. Yeah. Very understandable. As far as researching a good breeder, now you made mention of the fact that people should beware of when they buy these specifically harder dogs that are bred for guarding, specifically Schutzhund or livestock guarding breeds. But what do you think of breeders who sell those breeds as companion pets? Are they being responsible or irresponsible?
Well, that's a matter of opinion, because you can get a breeder who breeds for police work, let's say, and maybe because of the genetics, one or two of those dogs turns out to be a real soft dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not going to cut it for what the breeder likes to do with dogs. And that dog could make a wonderful pet.
What question? Well, see, I don't know how many people are going to specifically look for Schutzhund dogs or livestock guarding breeds, because I don't think that they're aware of those breeds and what their job is. But a responsible breeder, might she explain that to a person who's looking for a companion pet, that this particular dog might be a little softer than the rest of this litter, because the litter is actually bred for this particular job?
Well, when a breeder gets really into breeding for a particular sport or job, you know it because they're advertising it.
Okay.
They're going to tell you that, you know, you're most likely not going to be steered towards that breeder in your initial research because of that. People within those circles know who does that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They go out of their circles too much.
Right.
But it does happen. And you have to be careful even to look at the grandparents and see if they came from that type of a line.
Mm-hmm.
And, the breeder should be honest enough to explain that to the puppy buyer, because if it's a good breeder, they should have the puppy buyer sign a puppy agreement contract that says if it doesn't work out that they get first right of refusal to have that dog. They don't want you placing that dog somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the breeder's best interest to match up the puppy with the family as best as they can so the dog doesn't wind up coming back.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, they have a reason to do that for the dog's benefit as well as for the family's benefit and their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a dog is returned, nobody wins. It's not good for the dog, for the family, or for the breeder.
Absolutely.
So it's in the breeder's best interest to try to match people up. Now, you don't want to go to a breeder, and this would be mostly a commercial kennel, where you go in and they just put the litter of puppies out, and sometimes there are two litters combined in the one group, and they say, well, I'll just pick what you want.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that, because there's, no matter who breeds a litter, there's always going to be the more stronger puppy, the hotter puppy in the litter, and the softer one. And it's important, you don't want to put a real soft dog, a very, you know, what you would call a shy dog, who's not necessarily shy, he's just soft, in a family with a lot of little kids.
Yeah.
Because then the dog is going to get overwhelmed, he can't deal with it, and he's going to wind up biting. So it's important to know which puppy to get if you want it to be successful, and that depends, which puppy depends on this family situation.
Right.
So the breeder should be asking the prospective puppy buyer as many questions as the puppy buyer should be asking the breeder.
That's an excellent point.
You don't want to go to somebody who says, oh, here's the litters, and pick them out, and, you know, they pull a stack of papers out, and they just give you one. It may belong to that dog, it may not. You know, some commercial kennels are just borderline puppy mills.
Right.
And you have to watch out for that. Every degree of everything out there.
Sue, you mentioned advertising. What types of venues would a good breeder advertise? Would they advertise with a newspaper ad, Craigslist? Would there be a sign outside of their house? Would they advertise by attending breed shows? Or would they advertise on the web? What's a good sign that the breeder is a good breeder in the way he advertises?
All the things you mentioned are not ways good breeders are going to advertise.
Okay.
The only time a good breeder would use any of those means is if it's such a rare breed that people don't know about it.
All right.
Back in the day when you had rare breeds and people didn't know about rare breeds, which is, I was involved in the thick of that, then yes, you would see an ad in the newspaper, or you would see an ad in one of the dog magazines, and that's because people didn't know about that breed, and the breeder had to let people that wanted that breed reach those people to find them. Because you didn't have breed clubs, you didn't have dog shows, except for the rare breed shows in those days, to let people know you had the breed, okay?
Right.
Today, there's no need to advertise. A good breeder does not have to advertise. A good breeder usually has a waiting list of people for their puppies, and that's the kind of breeder you want to go to, even if it means you have to wait. It's worth waiting for.
Right.
And the more popular the breed is, the longer the wait's going to be.
Okay.
And also, which breed, because some breeds only have one or two puppies in a litter.
That's not a good thing, is it?
Well, no, that's the way they're made.
Okay.
Okay, you get like Boston Terriers or Pugs or Chihuahuas, they don't have big litters. And a lot of times these dogs, especially the Boston Terriers, Bulldogs, dogs that have excessively big heads, those litters have to be birthed by Caesarean section.
I see.
So that raises the price of the puppies.
Oh.
Okay?
Right.
And you have to understand, making a good puppy actually starts before conception. It starts with having a healthy male, a healthy female, which is a lifetime process. It starts with the testing of the parents. It starts with the diet of the parents, the care of the parents, and that's what your good puppy comes from.
Okay.
And then it's the good care where they carry the puppy and the proper handling, proper socialization, and the proper care until the puppy is ready to leave the litter. And a good breeder shouldn't let that puppy go before 12 weeks of age in many cases.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
But that's assuming that they're socializing that dog, that puppy, all along. Isn't that correct? I mean,
good breeder's going to be working with that puppy. And
handling the puppy and introducing the puppy to lots of different people. Correct?
Well, not necessarily, because when they're real young, you don't want a lot of people coming by them. But there's things that they can do. There's a program called the Biosensor Program
right.
that the way you stimulate the puppies from birth,
mm-hmm.
and things that you do that help make that puppy actually physically healthy, healthier, and mentally better.
Right.
I mean, these are scientifically proven things that, mm-hmm. that work,
mm-hmm.
and a good breeder is going to be up on that stuff. Mm-hmm. A good breeder is going to have a reason to breed. They realize that there are a lot of homeless dogs out there. They realize that there's a lot of dogs in the rescues, and they have to know they have to have a real purpose for breeding. They're not just breeding to produce good puppies. They're breeding for a goal, and you want to know what that goal is. Is it because they want a good field dog? Do they want a show dog? But the show dog thing, again, I hate to bring that up because that's what people focus on. There may be no puppies in the litter that turn out to be really good show quality.
Okay.
There's no guarantee when you breed a litter that what they're going to turn out to be like. All the other puppies that are not show quality, you get all the benefit of that in that pet quality puppy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So when people are checking out the breeder and see that the breeder is breeding a couple different kinds of breeds, is that a good sign or is that a sign that they might want to be cautious of?
Really good breeders, in my experience, and I don't know every breeder in the country, okay? But really good breeders only would usually never have more than two breeds.
Okay. That's a good sign to look for.
Yes, because a good breeder puts their all into that litter and that breed.
So if they're breeding a lot more than two breeds, then they're not really paying attention.
Well,
they don't have the time to pay attention to.
The chances are they're not going to be researching the history. Like when I had my Huskies, I could tell you all the way back to the original Huskies brought over by Leonard Zeppelin, their line.
Uh-huh.
And a good breeder knows that. The good breeder is going to know what they have, what the history is, and they have to know that in order to plan their breeding, to know that this line carries these genes, that line carries these genes, and I'm trying to produce this, and if I bring this in, I have a better chance of getting that. That's what breeding's all about.
Sue, what is your opinion of the breeders who are now taking all sorts of breeds and mixing them up?
I think they're terrible.
I mean, they're creating mutts. Not that I'm against mutts. I love mutts, but they're charging lots of money for these dogs that have been in shelters for years.
Well, these are called designer dogs, and people have been doing this since the 60s. And there was actually a pet shop in South Jersey that did this. They would take mutts and they'd put funny names on them, and we used to read the ads and laugh and think, oh, that's so funny how they came up with that name.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became big with the poo breeds, cockapoo, peek-a-poo, schnoodle.
Right.
And people got into this, and what they don't realize, even with the now popular labradoodles, okay?
Right.
There's no guarantee what the dog's going to look like. There's no guarantee. There's no consistency. So when you pay $1,500 for this mixed breed dog, and that's all it is.
Correct.
There's no guarantee about what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could pay that much or less to a breeder of good quality dogs and at least know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's over 500 plus breeds of recognized breeds of dogs out there. There's no reason to breed to try to create another mix.
I agree with you. I think they're coming out with these crazy things, and every day I get a call from somebody else who has a different breed that I've not heard about that is a mixed breed. It's just incredible that they're doing this, and they're changing the health of these animals. They're changing the characteristics and the behavior and everything. It's just getting all messed up.
Well, it is, and sometimes they have mixes that they don't know what they are, and they put a name to it, and then the dog behaves funny or has a training issue, and the people don't know because they don't know what. I can't tell you, in the past year, I've had to tell more people get a DNA test on that dog to find out what it is. I had one person contact me just a little while ago, and they said, oh, I think my dog's the sighthound mix, Irish wolfhound mix, because he's doing blankety blank blank.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, get a DNA test, and turns out it was a Great Pyrenees Labrador mix.
Oh, my.
I mean, not at all what they thought. I had another client come to me and swear they had a Labrador Retriever. I said, it's not a Labrador Retriever. It's a mix.
Mm-hmm.
And they went and got a DNA test, and it turned out to be half Australian cattle dog and half Labrador.
No kidding.
And that explained the behavior issues we were having with that animal. So it's not just a matter of the mixes. It's what it does to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a Great Pyrenees is a livestock guarding dog.
Right.
A Labrador is a hunter. You get the Labrador part says, okay, what do you want me to do? And the Great Pyrenees part says, well, you know, you can go to that place where it's very hot and has a lot of fire. You know, this is a whole mental opposites in this dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't know. It's not like one takes over. Under certain circumstances, that dog may behave one way.
Mm-hmm.
Other circumstances could behave another way.
Correct.
Without the consistency there, the people never know what's going to happen.
Right.
It can be hard to live with those dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that for many, many years there was a popular cross, and that I have to say there was only one or two times when in the many cases I had with that cross that the dogs didn't turn out aggressive.
Really?
Because genetically they just didn't work.
Okay.
And so these people that create these designer breeds, it's a fad. And it's just for money.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just greed.
Greed. And it's the same way with certain breeds. Like, you know, there's another breed I'm familiar with that occasionally would have a merle color come out. And then a couple breeders, decided they could make more money by producing it. And now they're producing it in that breed, even though the AKC Health Foundation identified the merle gene as the cause of deafness and blindness. That's why 30% of Dalmatians are deaf.
No kidding.
And I would, as a breed, as a foundation in a breed, I would say, let's disqualify that so we avoid the problem. But again, greed comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And they want, because people like the color, and they're ignorant of the fact that if they breed two of them together, they have a greater chance of producing a deaf or blind dog.
Mm, wow. So you mentioned that you have a brochure. Where can people get this brochure? Is it someplace online, or can you?
No. What I do is people that want to find a good breeder or a good what dog is right for them.
Yeah.
That's something I offer to my clients, but anybody can email me and I can work with them on that.
Okay.
It's not a brochure that I just give out to the public because it requires interaction with somebody who knows breeds.
When we put the podcast of this radio show up on my website, can I put your email address inside that podcast?
Absolutely. Put my website.
Okay. I'll do that.
Go to my website, and then they can contact me through my website.
I want a copy. I do. I mean, anything that you would write, I would want a copy of, because you're just so wonderfully experienced, and you have such a great way of explaining things. And I can't thank you enough for visiting with us today, Sue. And maybe we can talk more about this at some point, because it's a very large subject. It's
okay.
Kind of involved.
It is a large subject, and what... In conclusion, what I want to say is that you're going to live with that animal for maybe, say, on the average of 15 years.
Right.
You want to, it's a part of your family. And what I tell people that come to me that want a dog, I say, you know, you wouldn't marry the first person that you saw walking down the street.
Hopefully not.
And so don't go out and buy the first cutest dog that you see.
Right.
I mean, think it through. Think about the reason we have so many breeds is because there's so many personalities, and the different dogs are meant for different types of people, just like people have to have this matching personality.
Right.
Compatible personality.
Sue, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this for us. I love you to death.
Okay.
And we'll talk again soon. We'll definitely make another date soon, okay, so you can come back and talk to people here.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a great day, honey. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's my cue that we're out of time. Please be sure to listen again next week. I'm going to be speaking with a wonderful woman who has worked very hard to rehabilitate one of Michael Vick's dogs. It's a great story of love, and hard work, and it's a story with a happy ending. I hope you have a great week, and please tune in again next Thursday from 10 to 10:30 to Thursday in the Doghouse right here on WNJC 1360 AM. Talk to you later.